This is CliffCentral.com.
It's time to check in with Justice Malala. You know, every week we get to hear from Justice, and he's been busy, so we've got lots to talk to him about this morning. Let's get straight into it. Justice Malala and the Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's on CliffCentral.com. Just after 7, it's a Thursday.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on CliffCentral.com.
That's right. Justice Malala, I saw that the other day you interviewed, in fact, 2 days ago, you interviewed Thuli Madonsela.
I did. How are you guys?
Good. How are you, Justice? What's happening?
Very good. I have to say, you have to tell me about this 90% local thing. Is it good? What's going on? Is this a stunt?
I think it's good. You know, you could argue that everything in an election year is probably a stunt, but I think it's a good thing. Support local music, get more local artists playlisted.
I saw Don Laka on TV last night, and he was saying that he's been in this particular fight for 20 plus years, where they've just been trying to get recognition
for a long time.
Yeah, so he was very happy about the decision.
Yes. Okay. 90%, eh?
You don't like this?
Yeah, it's just I don't know how you're going to squeeze in my Beyonce and all that.
No, forget about it. You'll have to buy her yourself on iTunes.
You know, as a...
But where am I going to hear about her to buy her?
Well, if you're still listening to radio, that's your own problem.
No, I'm not.
As AKA said, Justice, Beyonce can kiss my South African ass. That's what AKA said.
Is that what he said?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I saw that. That's quite a thing.
All right, so I started off by bringing up the fact that you had interviewed the public protector the other day.
Sure.
And it turns out that the Sunday newspaper said someone wants to kill her.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one of those stories. You see it and you say, surely someone can't be that stupid. And then you say, well, you know, she's done so much and she's put so many powerful people really under the spotlight. And then you think of the, we're talking to each other from KZN. And I walk around here, people talk to me about Nkandla and so forth. And the work that she did there, and the fact that today we're talking about a president who's under huge pressure, and it's because of her stance on Gandla and her steadfastness about it. And you start thinking, well, maybe what's going on here? You know, the problem is that when she says, I took this to the police, and the guy who's in charge of the investigation told me, oh, you know, this is not too serious and so forth. You start saying, well, that's what they said about Nkandla, that, oh, don't do this or don't say that. And then down the line, it turns out to be a biggie. I just think that I would give her a little bit more of a hearing as opposed to those people who say, no, this is not too serious and so forth and so forth. So I think it's something to watch out for. But I'm also interested in the fact that in 5 months' time, she will be leaving. There will be no Thuli Madonsela as public protector. A new public protector now has to be nominated and now has to be nominated. And then we have President Zuma has to appoint him or her to the tough job. If you're one of those people, Ben, you might be interested, Mabale, you might be interested in this job, and you think, oh, wow, this has been amazing. Justice, nominate me, and I'll write the nomination. Mm-hmm. And people, the MPs like you, and you're the person who gets the job. What does that say as you start the job in 5 months' time? Does it say to you, whoa, I'm going to have great fun and it's going to be fantastic? Or does it say, watch out, if you step on some very powerful toes, we will come after you? So I think it has a chilling effect on our democracy. It has that effect that says, don't come in and do what she did. She's the last one who's going to do what she managed to do. And I think all of us should be very, very scared of a country where the public protector, someone who has been on Time Magazine's top 100 influential people in the world, is now being threatened. And according to her, the whistleblower is a credible whistleblower. It's someone who has given her office information before, and the office the information has turned out to be good information that they've used in investigations. So, I just think this needs to be taken seriously. I think President Zuma needs to, not just President Zuma, the law enforcement agencies need to seriously say, what do we do here, and how can we make sure that the next person who wants to be public protector does not walk into the office with this sort of thing hanging over her? But I think what's done is done. Whoever gets put up for the job now has to contend with the fact that the last public protector was threatened because of her very admirable stance on many, many issues.
Justice, when you spoke to her, did she seem to be worried about this? I mean, was it something that you found she was more concerned with than most people expect?
Yeah, you remember last year when Cliff Central turned one? Mm-hmm. I think you and Mabale interviewed her.
We did.
And I remember one thing that always strikes me about her is how calm she is.
Yeah.
And in fact, interviewing her is quite it's a beautiful and an intimidating thing, because you start off and she's so quiet and so calm, and she's holding it together, and that's the first thing, that she hasn't lost her cool.
Yes.
I think she is taking this one very seriously. I did notice that for the first time you saw the bodyguard near her. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the past, it's always been, if she did have a bodyguard, they were very much driving and so forth. This time, the bodyguard came into studio with her. So in her words, she said, look, we're all going to die one day. So this is not particularly something that means I will go, but that said, I think that, excuse me,
that's all right, you got a lot of people calling you. Sounds like chaos in there.
Maybe I should stop speaking about the public protector.
Yeah, I think that might be someone trying to kill you, Justice. But I mean, look, we should as a country consider it a serious affront to all of us that one of our public officials should be, threatened in any way by anybody. It's a big concern.
I think that's a bottom line. That's right. A bottom line that we shouldn't, that anyone should be threatened. And I worry, it's not just about her. I'm interested in all this stuff that's happening. If you think about the fights that have been taking place among ANC branches over who will become the next nominee to be the mayor of this little town, or the councillor of this little town, or that little town, all over South Africa. It happened last weekend in Hammanskraal, where I come from.
Yes.
It's happening in KwaZulu-Natal. Two ANC Youth League guys were killed last Sunday. There's a lot of this violence going on where people are battling over positions and are killing each other. I just think it's something that we all need to be very, very worried about, that this violent streak is once again rearing its ugly head. And I think when threats like these are made against someone like her, the fact that she is very sanguine, if you will, about it, despite the threat, doesn't mean we have to rest on our laurels. I really think we don't want to go to a point where you know someone is gotten rid of because of politics. Right. It's just not the good country that we said we want to build. It's certainly not one that I want to live in. If that sort of thing happens.
Justice, we're going to talk to Tito Mboweni later on. He's coming in as our guest this morning. But the unemployment figures came out, and I'm sure that this is something that you're also interested in talking about today.
Yeah, there are two figures. In fact, that's the unemployment figures. Listeners will know that the unemployment numbers came out from Stats SA, and they showed that unemployment had increased in the first quarter. We'd lost 355,000 jobs. We're now standing at 26.7% unemployment. But there was another piece of data that people might be interested in, and it came out yesterday. And it's from the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, saying that Egypt has overtaken... may have overtaken South Africa as the second largest economy in Africa. And I'll quote from a piece that was written here. It says, South Africa has been known as the continent's second largest economy since Nigeria rebased its GDP data in early 2014. However, the IMF World Economic Outlook released in mid-April provided more sobering GDP statistics for South Africa. Not only did the multilateral organization suggest that the South African economy would grow by a mere 0.6% this year, but also that the country is now only the third largest economy on the continent behind Nigeria and now Egypt. Guys, you know, it's not about being the biggest. I'll acknowledge that, and I'm sure Tito will speak to that. For me, it's about, as a country that's growing, a population that's growing, why is it we seem to be going backwards when we should be going forward? If you look at those unemployment statistics,
right,
it basically says that since 2008, when Thabo Mbeki was kicked out of office, when unemployment was at just over 20%, and we've gone from 20% to 26.7%. So every year, there's 200,000 to 500,000 young people coming into the workplace, ready to work, and we don't have jobs for them. Yeah. Or we have too few jobs for them. And yeah. Then there's people losing jobs, and it's difficult for them to get back into the game because we're just not growing the economy. Then you look at the other side of it and you say, well, no, the economy is growing. No, the economy is not growing, because if the IMF is right, we'll do only 0.6% growth this year. That means we're stuck in one place. That means that, and as Padilo Hotla said, on Tuesday, basically, we need to do something absolutely radical about our employment policies, about our macroeconomic policy.
And the only way you create jobs is by growth. You need the economy to grow so that it can accommodate more people and more products and more services and more jobs. And at that on that number, 0.6%, we're definitely not where we should be.
We're definitely not where we should be. And it would be interesting for me when you guys speak to Tito about, you know, I find it fascinating. He was the labor minister in mm-hmm. the Mandela administration. He was very young. I think he was 34.
He's still young. He'll get very angry if we don't say he's still young.
He's still very young. But he was the minister who brought in the Labor Relations Act. A lot of people say it constrains the economy and so forth. So I'd like to hear his views on that. But also, he was the Reserve Bank governor in that time when South Africa went from, you know, there was a time when interest rates were 22%.
Yeah.
And we took, you know, he was around when they were taken down to 10% and so forth. he was one of the architects of the great economy that was growing that we had in the 2000s. And so, you know, what would he say about this economy now? What would he say about how it's being handled and the fact that we are not growing? What about the National Development Plan? Why aren't we implementing that plan that we spent so much money on? I think these are real issues. These are issues that need to be looked at very seriously by people like him.
I will ask him, and we can find out directly from him. But I want to know, I mean, while we're talking about the economy and everything else, I see we're spending quite a lot of money now on another jet plane for the president. That's according to the defense minister, Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula, right?
Yeah. She said, we will buy one, but it will not be for President Jacob Zuma, but for any sitting president, regardless of political party. So it looks as if President Zuma and any other president who may come after him will get a jet plane. But for me, what was interesting was, here we are. We keep on saying, you know, tighten your belts. It's tough. The economy is not growing. South Africans are spending too much. Don't do that. Do that. So forth and so forth. I keep on wondering, if we're saying all these things, why is it when it comes to the basics, taking care of President Zuma should be flying, should be setting an example and saying, you know what, this economy, President Zuma was, we were number one when President Zuma came in. We were the number one economy on this continent. Surely you should be saying, no, we're going back to number one. We're going to grow this thing like nobody's business. So I'm going to put some money in SSA's pocket. You know, if he's flying between Joburg and Cape Town or between Joburg and Durban, there is absolutely nothing. There are flights, SAA, BA, Kulula, Mango, flying out of Cape Town, out of Joburg to all these destinations. He doesn't need a private jet. The jet that Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula keeps on saying it keeps on breaking down, well, maybe maintain it better, because it's not a very old plane by plane standards. It's actually pretty decent and new. So maintain.
I'm sure you and I have flown in much worse planes to Durban, Cape Town, Bloemfontein, all over the place, right?
Exactly. Much older planes.
And Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula is not worried about our safety.
that's the thing. So I think, you know, just to play around with this whole thing about the economy and losing jobs and spending a lot of money. One of the things that Moody said last Friday, when they said, oh, we're not going to downgrade you guys. We're just going to keep... You are now on negative watch. That means that we're watching you very closely. One wrong move, you're going to be in trouble. Was that they said, we are happy with the fact that Pravin Gordhan is now in charge of the state-owned agencies and is going to bring some discipline to the way SAA is run. Well, on last Friday, on the same day, President Zuma was at SAA telling workers there that, don't worry, I'm going to be closer to you guys to make sure that this place runs properly. I just haven't been paying attention to you. If Jacob Zuma, President Jacob Zuma, is going to be closer to SAA, you can imagine what many, many people are saying now. Oh, we don't want that, because that could be a bit problematic. So it will definitely be interesting to see how that goes. But, you know, on the economy, I think these are serious warning lights. The fact that 8.9 million of our fellow South Africans are out on the streets, no matter how prosperous I can be, if you, me, the guys in the studio, we make money and we are fine.
Yeah.
So long as there are all these people that are desperate, that are living in poverty and desperation around us, we will never be happy. We will right. never be happy.
Yeah, and you can't sleep. You can't sleep well at night knowing that your fellow citizens are not able to put food in their stomachs, because ultimately that's the kind of climate that leads to violence and revolution, and we can't afford that here. We need to keep growing and keep accommodating more and more people into the economy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so for me, I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to your conversation with Tito, because for me, if there's anything, it says, guys, we don't have time. We don't have time. We don't have time. Just get this into your head. If we don't resolve this thing, we'll be in trouble. We will be in big trouble.
While we're talking about money, because the biggest story of all that I want to talk to you about in a moment is Vuwani and these schools. But let's just quickly refer, because we're talking about money, is Zimbabwe's run out of money. They don't have any more money, yet some say it's the only true free African country. I'm interested in what you think of the politics of bankruptcy.
You know, it's amazing. A lot of people, Zimbabwe keeps on being referred to by many people as a model. Here at home, the economic freedom fighters keep saying, guys, you know, Robert Mugabe is a true hero of our revolution. A lot of people point to the fact that the Zimbabwe land reform process was essentially taking farmland from 4,000 tobacco farmers to 250,000 small-scale farmers. And so people say, look, no other place in Africa, no other country in Africa has managed to do that. And with what it has done, Zimbabwe has become essentially a place where Africans are in charge, and that is psychologically a powerful, powerful thing. But I've always thought, well, what do Africans deserve? Do Africans deserve a president who's in power from 1980 to 2016? Do Zimbabweans deserve such a president? Do Zimbabweans deserve to live in a country where they have to flee, to go through the Limpopo River, to have to face off against crocodile and other wild animals to get to a country where they can do some work.
And a country that then has xenophobic violence breakouts every now and then. Where you have to work as a domestic worker, even though you have a qualification as a scientist, you know?
And there are many, many, many Zimbabweans who are all that and doing all that, essentially because their country is broken. And so sometimes I think there's a romanticization of the Zimbabwe story that is just not in tune with reality. People will always vote. Don't think that because you've rigged the vote in 2008 and so forth that people will not vote. And the people of Zimbabwe have voted. The people of Zimbabwe have voted with their feet. There are doctors in Botswana. There are doctors in South Africa. There are bankers in South Africa. You go into a large chunk of South Africa's financial services. It's really Zimbabweans doing amazing work for us because we need those skills. So, is Zimbabwe so fantastic and amazing and great? For me, when I see Zimbabwe running out of cash like it is now, I say, think about all the things and all the policies you've been implementing just in the past year or in the past 2 years or in the past 15 years. And that is exactly why Zimbabwe is illiquid now and has to flirt with all kinds of things and that you're in so much trouble financially. You know, it's going one way, Zimbabwe, and it's going to need to think deep and hard about what's next if it wants to recover. But I don't think Robert Mugabe is the answer for a new Zimbabwe. I think that Robert Mugabe has been in power for too long. He's tired. He's got no new ideas for Zimbabwe. It's one thing to shake your fist at Mother England and call them colonialist pigs, which they probably are. But you also need a plan on the table, and you need to implement it. And if there isn't one, Zimbabwe will just be a country that's admired by a few cranks out there, but really going nowhere.
Justice, talking about going nowhere, it seems to me that there are going to be a lot of children in and around Vuwani who are not going to be able to go to school. And the government seems to be, at best, unenthusiastic about sorting out this problem. A problem which really is, it goes to the heart of so many of the issues that we have to deal with as society in South Africa. Children who can't get access to basic education, children who can't get access to basic resources, and in this case also about municipal demarcation, and the real losers will be schools and will be children.
Yeah. I think we touched on this a little bit last week, but I thought we should talk about it again and again, because there are two things. Gareth, I was on a panel yesterday discussing racism and race in South Africa. And these panels sometimes go in ways you don't expect, but it was an interesting panel. But one of the things that we discussed on that panel was, how does media handle racism? Have we perpetuated stereotypes of racism, of black people, and so forth? I'm interested in a lot of times we say the media didn't cover that story so well, and so-and-so didn't cover that story so well. Mm-hmm. But I think one day when, Ben and I decide to start our own political party and we become president and government and so forth, I want to say the media should cover what we do, not what are we doing? So what is this government doing about what's happening in Vuwani? And to be honest, I think it's pretty little. So down the line, in a month, I will get some politician telling me that you guys didn't cover the crisis in Vuwani well enough. But what is government doing? Because government is not, if anywhere else in the world, if more than 50,000 school children were not at school today, as it is in Vuwani, then, my brother, there would be a state of emergency. There would be troops in the streets of Vuwani. There would be investigators. There would be the intelligence agency saying, who are these people stopping these kids from going to school and burning their schools? The response from this government has been to sort of, I'm buying a jet plane. We're doing this. Cyril is in Rwanda. The president is busy with this and that and that. It's just another day in South Africa when 50,000, the number, in fact, is 63,000 young kids are essentially out of schools. And the Minister of Education says there is no more money to build new schools. And, we say, 11 people have been arrested. I am appalled. I'm appalled, actually, by what's going on here. I want to put it out there. I think this government hates black people. Enough of this talk about, so-and-so is racist. This government hates itself. If you can't stand up when 63,000 of your own children are in such terrible circumstances, do not have schooling, and you don't think it's worth throwing every single resource, then you have a problem. And I think we have a problem with a government that essentially just thinks, this is stuff that happens to black kids.
And it's acceptable, and we must just swallow it.
It's acceptable. It's okay. It's okay. There is no greater self-hatred than that. There is no greater... there is no greater worse comment that can be made about this government stance towards its own people when it does this kind of thing. You know what? I'll accept, by all means, buy yourself a jet, do all those things. But you can't allow the next generation of South Africans to be hobbled in this day and age by the fact that you did nothing when 23 schools have been, some say 24 and some say 25, have been torched, and nothing seems to be, there is no sense of urgency about this. There is no sense that that we are appalled. No, we just, it's fine. Let's just keep going. It's okay.
And you know
I can't tell you, Gareth, nothing makes me angrier than this issue.
You know, Justice, you've just put it all in such clear contrast here. You know, we get upset about things on Twitter, and we're worried about this and that, and a rule that's brought in here, a presidential jet here or there, whatever it might be, a racist on Twitter, for God's sake. And nothing ever comes of that, because it's one person and it's not going to make any difference to the average person in this country. But the real effect of something like Vuwani will be felt for generations. And we don't seem to get nearly as upset about that.
Absolutely. Generations. That's what people need to realize, that we are not, you know, next year, the year after, but those kids will be affected by this for a very long time, while people fight over who's going to build the school, who's going to do this. But you know, there should be a state of emergency declared over that area. There should be absolutely everything. You know, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. I saw a picture yesterday of the Minister of State Intelligence, Minister Mahlobo, walking in the streets of Vuwani, clearing rubble yesterday. And I thought, wow, you know, that's our James Bond. But quite frankly, I didn't feel like it's been taken seriously at all. I don't think it's being taken seriously at all. So yeah, that's more kids who will down the line will be reading about them as the 500,000 who disappear every year when we get the matric results, because essentially 1 million kids start school and only 500,000 we read about when it gets to matric. Where are the rest? And now these kids are going to become that faceless rest that becomes, they just force out of the system. We don't know where they go, but we know that the unemployment numbers are going up, and those unemployment numbers will tell you a lot about who we are.
Justice, thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. See you next week.
We'll see you next week. Justice Malala and the Burning Platform, cliffcentral.com, every Thursday. Don't miss a single episode. If you missed anything there, if you came in a bit late, you download the whole podcast in a couple of minutes' time, and we'll let you hear everything that Justice has to say about this and all the other issues that affect all of us in South Africa, weekly on a Thursday at the same time.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.